Legion Quest. This episode is about Legion Quest.
It's gonna lead into the Age of Apocalypse, a story that Justin and I both love so much. Leo doesn't know a fucking thing about it now. Anyway.
He's like, hey guys, what's going on? I read Cable 20. Be like, you asshole.
You fucking prick. Did you read anything else? Nope, just the one.
Yeah, just it was really confusing. What's with all that crystal bullshit?
The Dorkening and all affiliated shows are not intended for anyone under the age of 18. The following may contain discussions or scenes that have adult situations, graphic violence, nudity, strong sexual content, and graphic language. This show is intended for mature audiences only. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hey kids, it's time to check out the Dorkening Podcast Network. With over 30 podcasts that encompass everything from horror to video games to comic books, and so much more, you're bound to find the shows for your taste. Whether it be Nerds of Unusual Origin, That Strange Show, Retro Red Octopus, Splash Pages, Throwdown Thursday, The Horror Squad, Still Talking With, my God, man, I can't read all of these. So just feel free to play and experiment with the Dorkening Podcast Network. There are over 30 shows chock full of nerdy goodness to sink your ears into. And they're all available on Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, and wherever fine podcasts are broadcast.
Hi, everyone. This is Powerful Brandon, and you are listening to the Comics Paradox Podcast. This is the podcast in which we discuss all kinds of alternate reality tales and takes for stories and characters you may already be familiar with, talking about things like what-ifs from Marvel Comics or Elseworlds from DC, as well as different story arcs involving all kinds of different characters and comic books from across the gamut. For today, we are going to be talking about a particular storyline that popped up in the 90s for X-Men, starting with the miniseries Legion Quest and then dovetailing directly into the saga known as the Age of Apocalypse. But before we get into all of that, let's take a good look at our co-hosts here. Let's have them say hey to all of you out there. Mr. Leo, what's going on?
Hey. And did you say across the gambit?
I guess we hear what we want to hear, and no.
I know nothing about X-Men.
Well, you're in for a real treat. And also, we have Mr. Justin Cooper. How's it going, Justin?
Good, good. Excited for this one. I know much of X-Men. And the one thing I'll tell Leo is don't expect a lot of it to make sense and expect many contradictions. Then you'll be okay.
I would actually, myself personally, Leo, I would say you're at an advantage for knowing a whole lot of X-Men, because you can just go in and enjoy the story for what it is. And even the cursory knowledge that you might have about some of the characters, that'll be enough. That'll be enough. Like, you know, basic characters, like, you know who Angel is, you know who Storm is, you know who Nightcrawler is, you know who Gambit is. You know, like, there are other little things, you know, as along the way, like, if you're like, I don't know what the fuck this X-Man thing is, like, then we can explain, like, hey, you know who Cable is, so you're halfway there.
Yep.
Yeah, if they appeared in a movie or a cartoon, I'm good.
Yeah, you're kind of at a disadvantage there. Okay.
Well, I mean, no, but at the very least, you have a cursory knowledge. Like, you understand that Bishop is a mutant who came from a possible dystopian future. That's really what you need to know for Bishop in this series, you know, little things like that. You know that Magneto and Charles Xavier, you know, Eric Lenscher and Charles Xavier were friends, and but they had differing philosophies and ideologies. But they truly, like, they care about one another. They love one another. Like, they were close friends and had a healthy amount of respect for one another. But they just fell on different sides of the issue that, you know, their lives were about. You know that. You know that from the movies and the cartoons. So there you go.
That's that, kind of what this arc is about, too. Yes. Like, that exact relationship with them.
The respect part, especially.
Yeah.
And I think that not focusing on that for this particular storyline altogether, would have made it fall apart. Having it be the crux, though, is what makes this such an effective storyline. It is arguably one of the greatest X-Men storylines ever committed to paper. So that being said,
And we'll point out, too, who is writing some of this dialogue, who is a longtime favorite of the Comics Paradox show.
Hmm.
Really? Oh, you'll get there. Yeah, you'll get there.
Okay. So this starts off with a four-part miniseries called Legion Quest. And what that deals with is a character known as Legion, who is actually the son of Charles Xavier and a woman named Gabrielle Haller, who eventually becomes the ambassador for Israel to the United Kingdom. They met while Charles Xavier and Eric Lenscher were both working together at like a sanitarium, for lack of a better term, in Israel. I think it was Tel Aviv, maybe.
I believe you're correct, yeah.
And whilst there, all three of them, Gabrielle Haller and Charles Xavier had like a love affair. And by the time he left, he didn't know. He never found out until much later that their tryst, or I don't want to say tryst, because they really did like care for one another and they really were seeing one another. Just their lives pulled them in different directions. She got pregnant and she didn't tell him for a very long time. And David was born. And there was some retcon stuff having to do with that, with Charles and Moira MacTaggert and blah, blah, blah. But bare bones. David is born, and because his father is Charles Xavier, he actually is an incredibly powerful psychic. Psionic, and so powerful he can actually like warp reality. The issue, though, is that his powers are so potent that it actually fractures his psyche, and it caused dissociative identity disorder because of how traumatic his powers were to him physically. So his personalities develop as a way to protect him from those abilities and segment and compartmentalize each one of those abilities to a different personality. Yeah. So one personality may be high telekinetic. Another personality may be pyrokinetic. Another personality be telepathic. Another personality be low telekinetic. One might be bulletproof. One might be super strong.
Yep.
It's all based on this immense power that he himself has as David, but he can't control all of it himself. It's all segmented. And because
also, he has the snap into Slim Jim haircut.
Oh yeah. And that's like he like eraser head kind of shit.
Yes. Yeah.
And
very 90s.
Well, I mean, he's an 80s character.
80s character. Oh, yeah. 80s. I think he first showed up in X Factor.
No, he was first in the New Mutants.
New Mutants, okay, yeah. But he definitely showed up in X-Factor. I remember stuff with like...
Absolutely, yeah.
The Polaris and stuff like that.
Yeah, you're talking about it. In this book, because I have the Age of Apocalypse prelude, yeah. X-Factor specifically is trying to save his life from Mystique. So
is that the one, I believe, in that issue? Is that the one where he... One of his personalities is like, don't worry, I'll make sure everyone's safe. And he spreads like a telekinetic shield to protect everyone from bullets, and then another telekinetic personality is like, nah, fuck everyone else, and then just puts the telekinetic shield around himself and everybody else starts getting blasted by bullets. I was like, that dude is three types of fucked up.
I don't know, because there's another one, which is also an X-Factor book, where he ends up killing Destiny, which is pretty pretty important. That's why Mystique was after him. So, but again, he's also autistic, which is how they refer to him in this book. A lot of stuff that they talk about here, it really was kind of like cutting edge at the time, and they didn't know a lot of the stuff. Like, Brandon's referring to this properly. In the comics, they're not, they're just calling it schizophrenia. It's dissociative
identity disorder,
like Brandon's saying. That's actually what it is. And they didn't even know that because it hadn't been developed and named yet. So,
the DSM was still not as up to date then as it is now.
Yeah. And I mean, this originally, like, character was from 1986. So, like, there's a long history by the
but
time.
But I'm trying my best to navigate it as correctly as I can with the information we have now. Because I am striving. You're right, Justin. I sat down early today and thought really hard about how to present this information. But that being said, because of the fact that David has all these personalities that have been trying to protect him from the trauma of his own abilities, his code name becomes Legion, which is, of course, a reference, a biblical reference to the demon that Jesus Christ, Jesus of Nazareth, pulled out of a man and cast into a herd of pigs that he made run off a cliff. The whole thing is like, our name is Legion, for we are many. That's like sort of the concept of the name in the comic books here. But that being said, he's always had a fractured mind. And after after David killed Destiny, Mystique came at him and all this stuff, and he gets injured to the point where he is in a coma. And as it turns out, being in this coma started the process of pulling David's mind together. And for the first time, he woke up, and for the first time ever, he actually had control over all of his abilities at once, which means he was actually able to do anything. He could completely warp reality. He's like Proteus.
Yeah.
Without having to possess somebody else's body. Which is
definitely up there with some of the more powerful ones, like a Franklin Richards sort of
Omega level.
Yeah. Like without a doubt.
Yeah. And what happens is David here, he gets it into his head that he can fix everything. He can fix his father's dream, which is, of course, that mutants and humans can coexist peacefully. They all converge in Israel because they know that David's there and he's about to do something. They're not quite sure what.
Yeah, they were tipped off by X-Factor from two issues previous.
Yep. And we have Bishop, Jean Grey, Psylocke, Iceman, and Storm showing up, and they're conversing with Gabrielle Heller, David's mom, the UK Israel ambassador. And Storm actually approaches David, approaches Legion, to try and be like, hey, you know, what the fuck? You gotta cut this shit out. And David's like, yeah, well, let's try something out real quick. I've been really curious to see if I can do it. And she's like, what? And next thing you know, they're gone. And everyone on the ground is like, where the fuck did they just go? And there's like a huge boom, and there's Storm and David, where she's quite clearly a physical entity, and David looks like, you know, he's a transparent wraith almost. And he shows Storm exactly where they are. They're in Egypt, and there are planes flying overhead, and it's the moment where her mother is about to die from the attack that is about to take place. And he's like, go, you can do it. Save her, Storm. Fly to your mother. Save her. And she's like, oh God, I have to go faster, faster. And just as she's about to maybe like save her mom, he blinks them out of there and brings them back to the present. And she's like, you dare taunt me with an illusion that cruel. And he's like, oh no, 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 no. That wasn't an exercise in evil. And it wasn't an illusion either, but rather the greatest new power of the complete David Heller. He basically just showed her, I can travel in time. And he's like, these are energies that will allow me to twist fate and destiny to my own design. Don't blame me if you failed to make the most of it. And he basically implies like he's gonna go back in time and make sure that his father's dream is realized. And you know, he's monologuing a bit, and he's saying, you know, no monument to my father's dream, no matter how magnificent, can stand rock solid unless someone fortifies its foundation. And that's when Storm realizes, like, David's going back in time to somehow remake Charles's dream. Psylocke, quick, link yourself to his mind. And she uses her psychic blade to punch into Bishop, because he's a time traveler himself, and uses that to link to the coronal energies coming out of David. And as he goes back in time, he manages to suck up Storm, Psylocke, Bishop, and Iceman, and pulls them with him.
I'm glad he got Iceman, because Iceman's an amazing friend.
He's pretty cool.
He sure is. He's pretty cool too. Yeah.
And Jean Grey is just left there in the desert by herself, and she sends out a quick psychic blast saying, help me. And then faints, because that's the best thing that Jean Grey can do, is that's their major talent, is fainting. And then we get like a little bit of a side from the Shi'ar Empire with Majestrix Lilandra. And we find out like, yeah, hey, there's some shit going down, and all of reality is pretty much going to go splat, so you got to do something. And
issues with the Makran crystal,
and we see now that it's the past, like 20 years back. And this one's written by Fabian Nicieza, and we see that Charles and Eric are working together. Charles is admiring a wheelchair that Eric was able to fabricate.
I believe he's referring to him in this issue as Magnus, though, isn't he?
He says Eric and Magnus.
Yeah, because two issues later, he'll switch.
And yeah, just real quick, issue one you mentioned was written by somebody we're familiar with. That was Mark Wade, I believe, correct?
Dialogue by Mark Wade, yep. So it was Scott Lobdell with dialogue by Mark Wade.
Yeah. Which explains why everyone is so well spoken in Legion Quest book one.
Yep.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's fine. I appreciate it, because Justin mentioned it and I forgot to bring it back up. So what happens is we are clearly in the past. Charles is sitting in the wheelchair when we first see him, but he stands up, so we know like, okay, this is before his kerfuffle with Shadow King that leaves him paraplegic.
Or Lucifer or whoever it was.
I always liked the Shadow King, the Farouk thing.
That's honestly a better story than Lucifer, who is just some golden age or silver age, I guess it would be for the X-Men, some silver age villain, you know.
But yeah, so they're talking, and turns out that David is sort of John Doe. I mean, the Magnus even calls him John Doe. And the reason, by the way, that they go back and forth between Eric and Magnus is because this is the point in time where they actually finally decided to give Magneto an actual name.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Magnus Lencher. For the longest time, he was just known as Magnus. They even do say, refer to him as such in the X-Men 96 and X-Men 97 cartoons.
Yep.
Because they hadn't quite made that choice yet. I am glad that they finally gave him an actual name, like Eric Lencher. Thank you. That's like my thing with Wolverine. Like, all right, we've had 35 years of mystery. Give us something. And I'm fine with his name being James Howlett. I actually love how they tied that into Captain America later on after Origin, where Captain America sees Wolverine. He's like, hey, it's Lucky Jim. I'm like, what? What do you mean Lucky Jim? He's like, oh, well, you know, we served together in the war. I swear we all saw him get shot a bunch of times, but he always like walked away without a mark on him. So we always just thought he was lucky, you know, Lucky Jim. Like, that makes a lot of sense. I can dig it. I love that Logan's name in the army during World War II was Lucky Jim Howlett. But regardless, we have David there. He doesn't know who he is. His hair looks considerably more normal right now. And I do like that he's like, no matter how little I remember of myself, I do know that I'm quite tired of always finding myself wearing one of these silly little hospital frocks. Because if Legion had a costume, it would just be a hospital Johnny and grippy socks.
Yeah, it has been. You know, that's what his action figure came in, hospital attire.
And, you know, we have Rogue and Angel flying through the desert trying to find Jean Grey. They locate her. They bring her back. We have Gambit, Cyclops, Beast, Professor Xavier, and he's reaching out trying to see if he can find any trace of the four that were pulled into the vortex with David. And, you know, Jean is still passed out. Charles is just like, maybe I can... he turns to Hank, Beast, and he's like, Hank, can we begin? And, you know, Beast is just like, she's a little dehydrated, but I believe maybe just like if you use a gentle mental probe, and hopefully it won't require much effort. And then next thing you know, Jean just sits bolt upright, Legion! Like, well, all right. And Gambit's great. He's just like, you weren't kidding, huh? And, you know, they're comforting Jean, and she explains, like, he was so powerful, so overwhelming. What happened to the rest of the team, Jean? Where's Betsy? At this point in time, it's worth noting that Psylocke, Betsy Braddock, Elizabeth Braddock, and Warren Worthington III, Angel, were starting to embark on a romantic relationship. So Angel has some skin in the game, more so for Betsy being lost than, you know, some of his older friends. But she explains, like, it's not great, Charles. His mind was whole. He's not a shattered schizophrenic shell anymore. The pieces are glued back together, and he's more than he was. And it was enough to tear us apart. And, you know, the key here is, like, it would have been great for David insofar as his healing. But he was, like, just because his mind brought itself together doesn't mean he was healthy. There was still a lot of work that he needed to do to be okay. Like, that's where training with the X-Men and his father would have really come into play. But he unfortunately was still operating under a delusion, you know? So like there were portions and bits that really needed to be worked on and shored up. Meanwhile, we cut back to the past and we see that, excuse me, Psylocke, Betsy, Bobby, that's Iceman, Aurora, and Bishop are all back in Israel in the past. They have no idea who they are, just like David doesn't know. And all they can really go on is like they showed up with wearing gym outfits with X's on them. I think that's how Bobby describes it. And you know, they're just like doing their thing, working and trying to, you know, survive while they figure out what they're there for. There's a little interlude here where Sabretooth has been locked up as a prisoner at the X Mansion, and he thinks that he's just been like left alone in his cell. And of course, they left Wolverine to watch Sabretooth. And they say like, oh, watch the rematch of the century. You have to pick up Wolverine number 90, you know, whatever. I do believe that the end result of this eventually when they come back from Age of Apocalypse is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Justin, this is where Wolverine pops a claw through Sabretooth's skull.
Yep. Yeah, after he hurts Psylocke, and then Psylocke gets that face tattoo. Yep. Yeah.
Wolverine 90, that's not the one with the claw through the cover.
No, that's 50. No,
50.
50's got that guy.
It looks like the folder.
Okay.
It's like the top secret folder.
Yeah, but I will say this. So 90 is a Hildebrand painted cover. So it's Greg and Tim Hildebrand. They painted that cover. It's gorgeous. It's nice. Like a gatefold sort of thing.
Yeah. And we come back to Eric and David interacting. He's trying to help David into bed, and he makes physical contact with him. And David is just like, the anger burning inside you, it calls out to me. And Eric's just like, what are you doing? And that's where Legion sees like the anguish and agony that resides within Magneto's mind, insofar as his childhood and having been a concentration camp survivor and having his family all killed. You see Nazis, as Magneto viewed them as a child, as absolute fucking fanged monsters. And you see the quote striped pajamas and the star on the chest and stuff. And David's just jumping in way too deep, and Magneto like loses shit, just fucking stop this, and flips out. He's like, what in the name of God are you? Who are you to remind me of all I've lost, you animal? And that's when you actually start to see like maybe there'll be some reasoning within David, where Eric, Magnus runs, and David's saying, I'm sorry, I didn't know what you'd suffered. Oh, Lord, what's wrong with me? Who am I? Why am I here? Help me find the answers, Magnus. Help me. And, of course, Magneto's already fucking beat feet. He's probably trying not to weep openly because of all these fucking internal wounds that were just ripped open. And it cuts to Charles and Gabrielle walking down the street, and Psylocke walks by them, and there's sort of like a psychic feedback between the two of them. And Charles is like, what the fuck? But even more rapidly than that, all of a sudden he tunes into Magneto, because his thoughts and feelings are obviously so big at this point. And Magneto's just like, that kid, he fucking needs you. I think he's like one of those people that we were talking about before, the rare genetic quirk. This shit is bad, man. He made me feel things I don't like feeling. And so they go back, they rush back, and they come upon David in his room, and he's just got all kinds of visions of the X-Men and stuff from the future, like erupting in a flamed like visage from his own back due to his psychic abilities kind of going nuts. His mind is clearly working overtime, trying to make him remember who he is and why he's there. We cut back to the present. We have Cable and Domino showing up saying like, hey, how can we help? And Cable's explaining like, hey, my time travel stuff don't work. So I don't know what you want from me here. And one of the Israeli military guys is like, oh yeah, no. It doesn't really matter what this guy's here for. We're taking him in. He's wanted for all kinds of state crimes against the state. And Cable's just like, listen, it's not me. It's a clone of me. It's a long story, man.
Yeah, right. And
the reference is to the character of Strife from X-Force, the Mutant Liberation Front. We don't need to delve into that. But
Strife is basically the running gag of the X-Men universe.
Yeah, 100%. He is a joke. And then Empress Lalandra shows up. In a manner of speaking, and she's explaining like, yeah, there's a crystal wave making its way through the universe that is just destroying all of reality, and it's on its way here. And
guess what?
if you don't fucking do something about it now, we're all boned. And Charles is just like, how can you possibly know this? And then we see that where she is, because she's sending a projection to them as a message, she is surrounded by like half a dozen or slightly more watchers. like, it's such a big deal that the Watchers are actually stepping in and saying, like, yes, you must do something. We're not going to have any more realities to watch if you don't take care of this.
Everyone thinks because you're a zombie, you don't know good coffee. Well, they're wrong. There's only one brew that gets my seal of approval. Deadly Grounds coffee is my guilty pleasure. The aroma is so intoxicating. It brings all of my neighbors out of the woodwork. Deadly Grounds coffee. Coffee to die for and zombie approved. It's good to get a little deadly.
Use the front door! Oh, they're so disgusting.
Are you a fan of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comic books? Then Epic Tales from the Sewers is a podcast for you. We cover the comic books, video games, movies, cartoons, and anything else turtle related. We talk about the toys, we talk about the cereal, we talk about all the fun things about turtles that we love so much. So give a listen. You can find us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and more. Check out Epic Tales from the Sewers, part of the Epic Airways Podcast Network. Give a listen, dudes. Cowabunga is this podcast for you.
And
yeah, that's a big moment.
Yeah, it is. And we have the past again. Haifa, Israel. That's where they are, 20 years ago. And we have
men were men and hats were on men.
Yeah.
Ooh, and we got a must read, cable number 20.
Yeah, bullshit.
Not really. Yeah.
And it's funny, they actually
like Jeff Loeb, though, that cable's funny.
They screwed up a little bit right here, though, in the printing. That is supposed to have a K there. So all I'm saying, Eric, but it says Eric.
Yep.
But that is like the first time that he calls him Eric. And they're talking about, harmony existing between mutants and humans. And it's kind of cool. There's a man there who he doesn't have his legs below his knees, and he's like playing a flute. What's that?
Lieutenant Dan.
It is Lieutenant Dan.
And, there are some guys there at the bar who, of course they're fucking jerks dumping beer in the guy's head. And, Charles, I love it. The guy's like, because he's like, this poor veteran would be grateful for any money you could spare. And this big oafy loudmouth is just like, of course, gimp. And then Charles stands up and Eric immediately grabs his forearm. He's like, Charles, the ferry will be here any minute. We must get these supplies to the hospital. And this is like one of the coolest things I've ever seen from Charles Xavier. He's just like, I don't like the word gimp. And Eric's just like, Charles, sit. And he walks right over to this fucking dude and he goes, leave him alone. And guy doesn't do anything. And Charles just grabs like the webbing right here between his like thumb and the pad on his hand. He says, I said, leave him alone. There are 14 crucial nerve points in the human wrist. Pressure on these three can bring the strongest man to his knees. A lesson worth paying for, I believe. And then gives the veteran the money that the guy had in his hand. And, and then, a guy comes at him with a chair and Charles just holds his forearm real quick and breaks it. He was braced for it. And, there's a huge brawl and Eric steps up and he's just like, my friend has his hands rather full at the moment. Perhaps you'd better deliver your message to me. And they come at him and he goes, my friend learned to fight in the Orient. He is a gentleman. Sadly for you, I am not as cultured. And then just mollywops this dude. And it's cool because like Eric is actually just like straight up throwing haymakers. He is not using his mutant abilities right now.
Yeah, he's huge too. Like in terms of this, I imagine he's got to be like 6'4" or something in stature.
Yeah.
He's a beef, like a big beefcake guy, you know?
Yeah. And I love it. It says 14 sailors later.
Yeah.
And Eric's just like, the fun's over before it truly begins. How many of these brawls have you been in, Charles? And then Charles goes, counting this one? One. But I love. And Eric's just like, I'm doubly impressed. You're a man of conviction. What was it you said again? Any dream worth having? And Charles finishes it with, is a dream worth fighting for? Ha! Fine and noble words, my friend. Someday I'll carve them on your tombstone. Dun, dun, dun.
Foreshadowing.
And, you know, we come back to the present and they're all freaking out because, like, they have no idea what to do. They're like, we're going to try to see if we can send, like, a vision of Cable using his latent abilities back to Bishop because he's a time traveler. So he'll be able to zero in on him and try and see if we can get a message to them. We see that these guys, you know, Bishop and Bobby and all of them, they're working on the docks in Haifa. And I'm probably saying that wrong. It's probably Haifa or something. But they're getting together and trying to figure this out with Storm and Psylocke. And meanwhile, we have Charles and Eric on the ferry that they mentioned with the supplies coming back. And Charles just talking about how much he really, really likes Gabrielle. And then we get like a really
going, you ever think you like girls because you're supposed to?
And then this was really weird. I wish they hadn't included this because it's just it's kind of tasteless. But David is starting to like come together in the worst way.
Yep.
And he makes himself look like his father.
Creepy.
And proceeds to sexually assault his mother as Charles.
What the hell?
Oh yeah. It's weird. It's out of place. There's no like implication that this is about to happen. There was never any sort of Oedipal thing beforehand. It's just disconcerting and gross. Like I said, you could take that out and it wouldn't make any difference. You could have just had it be like unsettling mother. Oh, and then not have this right here. And then come back to, you know, the two of them coming off the ferry and Charles realizing there's something wrong with Gabby. I sense something. And as they run off, we have Cable show up and that vision that they're trying to send goes right to Bishop. And tells him, like, you know, hey, this is the shit that you're here for. He zaps them all. They all remember what they're there for. And when they get to Gabby, she looks like she's been beat up. And there's Legion all fucking evil looking. Like, they could have just left it at that. No implication of sexual assault or rape or anything like that.
Because we're left to our own devices. Like, thinking, what happened? You know?
Yeah. There was no need for him to look like his dad like that. It was weird. Like, he definitely sexually assaulted his own mother. It was like the worst case scenario of Back to the Future. And It comes to Legion Quest 4. And now the X-Men who were in the past, they remember why they're there. And they decide to throw down and try to stop Legion from killing Magneto. That's what the goal here is. He's going to stop the man he sees as being the biggest hindrance to his father's dream of peaceful coexistence between humans and mutants. And this is like a knockdown, gigantic, bombastic fight. No one's ever seen mutants like this. And you just have all kinds of energy and Iceman, fucking stuff blowing up and getting thrown and tornadoed around, lightning, rain, hail. In the middle of the desert, and Charles zaps Gabrielle asleep, so she's safe and kind of out of the way. And then he's like looking at these four individuals fighting this John Doe, and he's just like, "What?" I will say it is amusing to me that they keep saying in regards to Psylocke, like, an Asian telepath with a British accent, like. Do you know how many Asian people live in Britain and have British accents? That is not like a rare thing.
If this is the early 70s or the 60s or something like that in Israel, maybe then it is, you know,
maybe. I don't know.
You know,
it's just weird to me. I mean, you think about, oh my God, what's her name? Who played Colleen Wing?
Jessica something.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's great. I like her.
But yeah, she was also on Game of Thrones. Jessica Henwick.
Yeah.
This is a very beautiful Asian woman with a British accent. Like, she would be a great pick to play Psylocke. I mean,
yeah,
I would have rather seen someone, you know, British and Asian play Psylocke than Olivia Munn. I mean, no shade against her. It's just Betsy Braddock is not supposed to be American. You know, it's that simple. And let's not even get into the weird hand thing of it all. And I know they changed that eventually too.
Everything. But,
you know, so Charles is just standing agog, with all these folks doing this stuff. And, you know, he's just like terrified and exhilarated because it proves what he was thinking about mutantdom, but, not like this. He did not want this. And, they're moving forward. We see the present again. Lalandra is just like, yeah, that crystallization wave is devouring star systems as we speak. And as soon as it happens, the star systems just cease to exist. And Charles is like, well, if that's happening, that means my X-Men failed. Like, obviously we're in the thick of it and it's about to happen. So everything we're doing now is futile. And, you know, there's like a little bit of a Lady Hawk thing between Charles Xavier and Empress Lalandra here, where it's, you know, we die as we were forced to live, together in spirit, yet still light years apart.
So they can only talk like one time a day.
Yeah, if Matthew Broderick is present.
Yes. only he can hand the notes back and forth.
And the mouse.
It makes sense too, because she is kind of like a Lady Hawk.
Yeah.
The Shi'ar Empire, they are a race of people that actually evolved from birds.
Yeah.
But we have Remy and Rogue kind of, you know, that unrequited thing. They know that the end is coming. Angel is flipping out because he's, you know, like he's never gonna see Betsy again. So he goes to stand with his old friends, Scott and Jean. He's like, I hope I'm not interrupting. And they're like, never, man. Like, come on, stay here with us. We're all family, which was actually a really nice scene.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, Cyclops and Jean Grey are like holding each other, but like he comes up to them and Jean Grey immediately takes his hand to let him know, like, no, you're part of this. You're part of us. You're not going anywhere. And
he seems here's, it, so yeah.
Yeah. And here's like the biggest part of what's going to happen is this is all being broadcast on television in the past, all this big superhuman throwdown. And then we have a rather large foreboding presence on the lower 4/5 of this page saying, so it begins over a decade earlier than my sinister associate predicted. For him, it will be a revelation of both ecstatic and infuriating proportions. Although the genetic tree he has so meticulously watched over for decades is bearing fruit far sooner than he anticipated, at least the time of blooming has finally arrived. As for myself, these events simply mean that the order of ascension begins now, and may the fittest survive the challenge.
It's apocalypse, kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the bitch of it is, this means that mutantdom is making itself known as a presence like 10 to 15 years before they should have naturally. So it's pushing up his timetable. He's more prepared than anybody else would be at this point. So his whole plan of survival of the fittest, he's going to get a leg up because, well, by the end of this, you'll see why that might be a problem.
Yep.
We have all this shit going down. So between Legion and, you know, he's even Magneto's trying to stop him, and he's just mollywopping Eric. He is fucking him up. And that's when he starts saying, you know, like, it's all because of you. My dad's dream just didn't work. So I'm going to make sure that you don't work, like, breathing and living wise. And that's when Charles is just like, wait a minute, that poor insane boy up there is somehow my son, and he's gonna kill my best friend for my sake.
The X-Men, folks.
And we have the four mutants that came back, Storm, Iceman, Bishop, Psylocke. They're standing by Charles Xavier and they're like, yeah, you know, we're here because you're our mentor and we fight for the dream that you believe in. And right now you need to let us try to stop this guy because this guy is the living personification of Bad News Bears. And Iceman goes full blown fucking dunzo with Legion and he freezes the entirety of David's body. And he's like, all right, that's that. Like, he's on ice. And that's when Psylocke's like, guys, I can sense his thoughts and I think they're about to. And then he fucking busts out and he's completely whole again. And he finishes, he's like, explode. That's what you were going to say, right, Psylocke? And he grabs Magneto because they're all assed out now. And he makes a psychic blade similar to what Psylocke makes, only instead of purple, it's like orangish red. And he's getting ready to plunge it right through Eric's chest. And right at the last second, Charles Xavier runs and jumps in between the two of them. And the psychic blade goes right through Charles's skull, killing him instantly. And as soon as he does it, there's a warp because this means that David Haller was never born, in which that also means the X-Men were never formed, so they could never come back in time to stop him.
Like a paradox.
But everyone gets sucked out of existence through a vortex, and it's like a cool warping kind of effect where they like get stretched. But there's one person who remains. Bishop. He's already a time-displaced man. But his mind has been damaged by the energies which rip Legion and the other X-Men away. And he is now the sole survivor of a world that is lost, possibly forever.
Two worlds that are lost, possibly. Two,
true.
So, yeah.
And Eric is distraught. His best friend just gave his life to save him. And we see that in what we know as the present, that crystallization wave has hit and it's made its way to Earth. And just as it is about to get everybody in the desert where they've been waiting, Remy and Rogue finally kiss and everyone is frozen by the crystalline wave and everything starts to shatter.
Ton of B plots like throughout there is what it's
yeah, there's stuff that's seeded for much later on. This whole Cable 20 thing, it is seriously, it's just all the same shit. Everybody in the desert waiting for everything to happen. The only thing is, okay, Cable kisses Domino. That whoopty shit. That is actually pretty cool shot there. But and there you go. And that leads into the Age of Apocalypse proper, starting with X-Men Alpha. It's a one shot that leads into the entirety of the story, which we will get into over the month of April, as we are calling it the Comics Paradox Age of Aprilcalypse.
Nice. Yes. It's gonna be so awesome. And I mean, I'm glad because I've never heard anybody cover Legion Quest in all of their coverage of Age of Apocalypse with the lead up. And it's so important to have that lead up.
Yeah. I mean that Justin, you know, my stance on it. I feel that you need to have Legion Quest.
Yeah.
Before you get to Age of Apocalypse, you need to.
Yeah. And I'm all for if listeners, if you want to go back and, you know, check out the early issues of what was it like New Mutants 17 or 18 or something like that, you know, the early Claremont stuff where he starts developing who David Haller is, the Bill Sienkiewicz artwork. Go check that shit out.
Yeah, there's some really interesting stuff. Also, just in like a sort of skewed take, I really enjoyed because it was so weird and different. if you get the chance to check out the FX 3-season series Legion that was created and developed by Noah Hawley, popular for Fargo on FX, I highly recommend it. It's weird. It's tangentially related to X-Men. It does involve one of the classic X-Men villains, Shadow King, who is played in the show by a couple of different people. One is an actress who is known for playing weirder characters. And another is a gentleman. The actor's name is Naveed Negabon, which is one of the coolest fucking real names I've ever heard in my life. It sounds like a villain's name to begin with.
Like an evil Cinnabon.
But the guy who they have playing Farouk in Legion, Naveed Negabon, he is so charismatic. Like, I never thought I'd like the Shadow King in anything. And he is, I mean, he's got the fez and he's got the sunglasses. He's just not like a big fat guy or anything, but holy shit. Like, he's so charismatic. It's exactly the smoothness you would expect from a character like the Shadow King. But yeah, if you want to have like, check out like a weird skewed take on the character of David Haller of Legion, I highly recommend checking out the show by Noah Hawley on Fox Legion starring Dan Stevens. It's
Brandon,
it's
do you know, are these all available on like the Marvel Ultimate or whatever it's called? Like, can they get these issues?
I believe you can check this out on Marvel Unlimited. I know that if you go to Amazon and their Comixology section, you can get the collected stuff digitally. My recommendation, if you want to get like what we're going to use for covering Age of Apocalypse, there's 3 books that were collected. There's X-Men Alpha, X-Men Age of Apocalypse Alpha, X-Men Age of Apocalypse Reign, R-E-I-G-N, and then X-Men Age of Apocalypse Omega. That shows it all in the order that it was released. A lot of other collections will pull together and do it in chronological order, which is not beneficial. There was another series that was done. I believe, Justin has the prelude.
Yeah.
To that one, it was a 4 volume set, but with the prelude, technically 5.
Yes.
And they're all pretty sizable, but that one I think does it the right way too. I don't think they do it chronological. They do it in the order that it was released. So it makes sense once you get into the Age of Apocalypse stuff. But there is, with the prelude and Legion Quest, like the actual Legion Quest collected volume, they throw a bunch of that earlier Legion stuff in to kind of frame who the character is. For our intents and purposes, though, I think the overview we gave, that's really what you need, because once you get past Legion Quest, it's not so much about Legion as it is the results of his actions, i.e. the Age of Apocalypse.
Yeah, they'll bring Legion back later on in another X-Men series called X-Men Legacy down the road, like way down.
Yeah.
But at that point, we will have already covered, and they would have already done the damage here. And I mean, really, the lead up stuff for this in the prelude book, it's a bunch of crap that's about like, oh, this is about Betsy and Warren. This is about Sabretooth. This is about Gambit. This is about whiny ass Iceman. Yes, whiny ass Iceman. And it's just, it's a lot of fluff, and it's like very soap operatic and stuff. So it's like,
Once you get into the actual Age of Apocalypse stuff, man, like there's some characters in there that are just really, really fucking cool. Sabretooth became a character that I absolutely fell in love with in Age of Apocalypse. I'm so glad that they eventually ended up including both him and Blink in Exiles. There's a really nice sort of father-daughter relationship there between the two of them. It shows that Sabretooth could have that same softer side that we see from Wolverine in so many different books over the years, especially with kids like Jubilee or Kitty Pryde. You know, we also get badass Sunfire.
Yep. Yeah.
Sunfire is such a badass, tragic character in Age of Apocalypse. It's fucking, oh my God. Like, his stuff is brutal in it. And Nightcrawler has like one of, he and Gambit, the two separate books within the Age of Apocalypse, have, I think, two of the coolest fucking stories. Like, they're literally sent out to go find things. And for a good portion of it, it's like, why? And then some of the stuff they come across as they're doing their stuff, it's seeded so well with these Age of Apocalypse versions of characters. Such as, you know, if you're a fan of Deadpool, you're going to be a little creeped out by the version of Deadpool yeah. that shows up in Excalibur. Deadman right. Wade is what they call him. And poor Bishop, man. I mean, this is a guy, by the time that he shows up in what we consider present day for Age of Apocalypse, he's like 60 years old, you know, and the stuff that they have going on with Apocalypse and Sinister and oh yeah.
I love it. I loved X-Man. Like one of the things.
Me too.
There's Forge, there's Sinister, there's, you know, Sauron and
Toad.
And they look awesome. So it's such like it's such like where style meets substance in such a weird way. And I'm like, this is a cool book, man. So I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, it's for real. Like I haven't read this in a few years. I revisit it probably like every 5 or 6 years, you know. And I honestly have to say there are weak points in some of the stuff, but few and far between. Few and far between. I think maybe one of the weakest titles, the weakest title. This is just my opinion. I think the weakest title might be Generation Next.
Oh yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Absolutely.
And it's still actually not bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like it's there. And really what makes Generation Next worth it is Colossus and Kitty.
Yep.
You know, and it's such a superb storyline that
I bought all the action figures. So, I mean, across the last 3 years, they've released two different waves. So now I've got all the Age of Apocalypse action figures. They're just releasing statues. No, I'm not going to get the statues, but
there's so many cool things. And I mean, to see the result of an unbridled Mr. Sinister's experiments because
and Hank McCoy.
Oh, who, my Dark Beast. Oh, God. The Mengele of the Age of Apocalypse. Like, you thought Mr. Sinister was bad. Beast is the best way to describe him.
Yep.
Like, fucking
horrible. He is quite possibly the worst character, like, in terms of, like, villainy in this entire thing, including Apocalypse. So. Mm. Including Shadow King, which is like, that is a feat. So
yeah, we'll see
that as we get going. So
he's horrendous in this, and I can see why it appealed to them so much after the fact. And it's not giving anything away, but they did bring Dark Beast into the 616 proper.
Yep,
in the Marvel Universe, and I can see why. I mean, and not only that, like, he looks so different in Age of Apocalypse. His fur is a little longer and mangier. It's like darker, like bordering. It's like a grayish charcoal black. And when he makes it to the 616, he sees the actual Beast, the actual Hank McCoy with the blue fur and everything. Yep. Yeah, that's what he looks like in Age of Apocalypse. And when he gets to the 616, he takes one look at Hank McCoy with his blue fur and everything. He's like, I know exactly how he did that. And does it to himself so he can look exactly like Hank McCoy and further confuse anybody around him and get the shit that he wants. It's good.
It's cool. It's cool. It's definitely cool.
So, yeah, we're going to be covering as much of this as we possibly can. It's going to be a real flyby kind of thing. And, we'll stay on top of trying to find, you know, the best places for anybody to get these to read. We're going to do an overview. There's a lot to cover, so we can't spend time going over individual issues per se. It's just going to be sort of like an endurance run for the month of April.
Yeah, exactly.
Because this was 4 months of several different titles spread out, you know, so like that. I mean, I have the individual comics. I collected them. I read them when it came out, and it's a stack of comics like this, like no joke. So like what we just covered in this one episode was this much of that pile.
Yeah. And I mean, realistically, what it was Uncanny X-Men 320, 321, and X-Men 40 and X-Men 41.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's where that came from. So,
we're gonna jump in and cover this, and you know, we'll try to touch on the big stuff and the cool stuff and anything else. If you have any questions, you know, hit up the website, comicsparadox.com, comicsparadox.com. Send us messages. Gladly answer anything on air, and try to figure out, like I said, the best way for anybody to get access to this, lead them to the right stuff, because this is a story worth reading.
Hell yeah.
It really is. Like, even, you know, Leo is not well versed in X-Men.
No, but, you know, having you go through it, I'm very interested in giving us a read as soon as I have time, you know.
Yeah.
Because the moves keep me a bit busy, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. But I mean, hey, I'm just cool
that we could kind of like explain it to you.
That was excellent.
Exactly.
So we'll take our leave now. Let all of you ruminate on what we're talking about for that, just that precursor to the actual Age of Apocalypse. Let you kind of, like I said, ruminate on that. We'll give our valedictions now. I'm Powerful Brandon. Thanks for listening. If you want to check out Instagram for the podcast, it's at Comics Paradox Podcast. You can follow me on social media as well at Instagram. At This Brandon Has Powers. I mentioned the website. You can also please feel free to go check out thedorkening.com. It's the network that we're on. There's a lot of different shows, a lot of different fun people doing stuff, covering a wide range of topics. There's something there for everyone. So what, 40 plus shows? Just go, you know, sample it out. You know, it doesn't cost you anything but your time, baby. And aside from that, you know, let's hear from my illustrious co-host here. Justin, what do you got going on, bud?
You can check out our other show called The Dork Knight, where we do alternate to this one, which is a show about two fans that love Batman. And Brandon's there, too. So most of the time we'll cover some stories or characters and all that about the Dark Knight and see just kind of what the perspective is from maybe someone who's not so close to it as we are. But you can check that out. It's another Dorkening show. And you can check out my show. It's all about Ninja Turtles. It's called Epic Tales from the Sewers. Check that out on the Dorkening.
Excellent. And Mr. Leo Pond.
Yeah, and if you wish to examine my experiences with a non-X-Men, you know, I don't know where I'm going with this. Anyway, just Google me. You'll find me.
I don't know. Just Google me.
I try. That's
when you appeared in the past 20 years ago.
Google is free.
Where was I 20 years ago? I don't know.
Probably wearing a duster somewhere, hanging outside of a Blockbuster Video. Yeah, I don't know.
I did see somebody wearing
watching Renegade
bowler hat the other day.
Oh, cool.
Bowler hat and a duster. That's
yeah.
What's his name from Briscoe County? Right? What was his buddy's name?
Oh my god, I can't even remember.
Started with a B, right? I don't know.
Yeah, it was crazy. Bowler hat. I think he had a feather coming out of it going into. I was just leaving the chiropractor.
That's Badger.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Well, anyway, you know how to find me. So,
yeah. Well, so anyway, everyone, thanks for listening. We'll be back quicker than you know, and we'll be starting off with X-Men Alpha and blowing through as much of that as we can to get the whole kit and caboodle covered and finished up, and hopefully whetting everyone's appetite and palate enough that they want to read the full thing in earnest. So, definitely. Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Bye, everyone.